Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Good morning. Welcome in. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan on this Wednesday. We're just a couple of guys who just pulled off a fantasy trade.
Marquee fantasy trade behind the scenes here. A couple 0-2 starts in the Grant and Danny Listener League.
How do you prep for your show?
Yeah, what do you guys do? We get ready to talk to Kevin Bacon at 11 and rip off an Adrian Peterson for James Washington trade in a PPR league. I'm going to stash him on my bench, and I don't know what you're going to do with Peterson, but that's your problem now.
Beats working for a living, I suppose.
Tell you what.
I'll get home today. I'll get ready to take the baby in the stroller around the neighborhood, and my wife will say, "What'd you do at work today?" And I'll say, "I pulled off a fantasy trade and talked to Kevin Bacon."
Okay.
We are expected to catch up with Bacon at 11 o'clock. Jimmy Moreland is on the show today at 11:30. Spread the word. The People's Corner will be with us on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. Got a lot to get to, but we got to start with the Nats, as we will do more often than not. Down the stretch they come. 12 games remaining, and last night the Nats needed a win, and they got one. Patrick Corbin was fantastic, nails, despite not being efficient. Now, you don't have your best stuff, and he had his best slider for sure. Commanded the fastball came and went a little bit, but you got to just gut through it last night in the heat in St. Louis against a really good lineup. He didn't give up an earned run. The first run he allowed in the game, which tied the contest at 1-1, scored on a Trey Turner error at shortstop. The second run he gave up, the only other run he allowed last night, scored on a throw into center field by Yan Gomes on an attempted stolen base. He left with the lead, and the Nats added offense while their bullpen, three innings of one-hit scoreless ball with three strikeouts, pitched very well. But the story to me was Corbin, who punched out 11. On his first 13 sliders, he had 10 swings and misses and two foul balls. It was the best slider maybe he's had all year long.
Yeah, it was sharp. Tournament-style baseball, too. This is what you got to do now. Forget about, hey, what about tomorrow? We got to make sure we stay off this one guy. You don't have time for that. You put yourself in a spot. If you were still up a touchdown in the wild card standings, you wouldn't have to do this, but they do. Daniel Hudson's got to go two innings last night, right? Corbin's got to get out there for an extra high pitch count north of, I think it was 110.
I think so I hated the decision in real time. I understood why they were doing it, but they started an at-bat with him against Fowler, who'd been seeing him all night at 109 pitches, and Fowler first pitch swinging on the 110th pitch, tapped on a slow roller back to Turner, who made a nice play coming in toward the plate. But you're right, 110 pitches, and they rode him rather than going to the pen in the sixth.
Yeah, so to me, this is what has to happen. So now you worry about tomorrow. So you're probably going to have to stay off of Hudson tomorrow. You got a two-inning save. So you got to figure out, who's my closer tonight? How am I getting where? Let's hope Max Scherzer goes deep for an afternoon game. You got a quick turnaround. Yan Gomes is probably catching again today. I haven't seen the lineup, but that's a tough ask. But you put yourself in the spot. It's a no 80% games left. You need every single W that you can muster at this point. Thank goodness Sonny Gray dealt for the Reds last night against the Cubs. He was nasty. Mr. Slider was snapping him off. The Brewers, of course, won because the Brewers played. You can't afford to have a day off or a game off. That was a big win last night.
Yeah, while Milwaukee did win, to your point, the lead for the Nationals over the two teams behind them grew because of the Cubs' loss. So they're 1.5 games up on Chicago and Milwaukee, now tied for the second wild card spot. A couple of notes on the Nats' offense yesterday. Howie Kendrick hit his 16th home run. He also tripled and scored another run. For the early part of the game, he was their entire offense. It was mm-hmm. Howie Kendrick 2 and the Cardinals 1 at one point in time. As the game went on, Victor Robles did the heavy lifting. Two huge two-out hits for him. But get this. Kendrick at-bats per home run. I looked this up last night.
It's a good nugget.
Since 2014. That year, every 88 at-bats, he homered. In 2015, every 51 at-bats, he homered. 2016, every 60 at-bats, he homered. In 2017, as he's getting older, he's homering more here. Every 34 at-bats, he homered. Last year, every 38 at-bats. This year, every 19 at-bats, he's going deep.
Pretty incredible.
At 36 years old. And oh, by the way, it's not like he traded in batting average for pop. He is hitting 340. He has a higher batting average than Anthony Rendon. He just doesn't happen to qualify for the league lead. He was big again last night.
The 0-2. Breaking ball, sky to deep center field again, sending Bader back on the run to the warning track, climbing the wall, and Kendrick has done it again. He homers onto the batter's eye in dead center. Last time he just missed a home run off Bader's glove. This time Bader couldn't catch it or knock it down as Kendrick gives the Nationals the lead with home run number 16. The Nationals 2 and the Cardinals 1 as that one lands a third of the way up the batter's eye in dead center field.
In the end, I think my award for the MVP last night probably does go to Robles, but Kendrick got the scoring started and was huge early on. Victor Robles, by the way, up to almost 260 with his average.
Yeah.
Hitting .435 in the last week, .321 in his last 15 games, and he's hitting .304 with an OPS well over 800 in the last 30 days. Victor Robles, who's a great defensive center fielder, has figured it out at the plate a little bit at a perfect time for Washington.
Yeah, and they need it because as the offense is scuffling, the wonderful stories of Asdrubal Cabrera, the dip in batting average of guys like Eaton and Turner who have cooled off a little bit, you need some lineup balance. It can't just be the Rendon and Soto show. And that's important. That's huge. Because the lineup's going to find you. You're going to have times where those guys are on base and you got to knock them in. So that was good. It's also good to see Yan Gomes get a couple raps last night in an RBI.
Two doubles.
Yeah, that was important because he's the catcher. Kurt Suzuki, the guy that has bailed you out a dozen times or more over the course of the season, not available right now. Not sure when he's on his way back, but that was important. That's a big deal. But to Kendrick, I don't know that there's a stronger guy in that locker room. I know Matt Adams is a giant. He looks like a giant that escaped from some sort of giant facility. That was a good analogy.
What?
I'm just saying he's bigger than every other human being in the locker room. But Kendrick might be the strongest guy pound for pound. I mean, he is a diesel gentleman, and the ball is flying off his bat at this point, more so than it has in years past. He's been a contact, opposite field, middle away, line drive kind of guy. But now some of those balls have backspin and are carrying. He needs to be in the lineup. I know what they've done all season long, and David Martinez has done a great job of managing him. I know guys like me or other fans have been frustrated where they're going, why doesn't he play every day? He's hitting .340. Health-wise, he can't do that.
No, he can't.
He'll get worn down. It's hamstrings. It's Achilles. It's this other stuff. But again, talking tournament-style baseball, he's your third best hitter probably.
Well, and I heard a few weeks ago, so there was a time where, I don't remember if it was Dozier on the paternity list or what it was, but Kendrick had played a handful of straight days and had to basically ask out of the lineup after like four straight days. He just couldn't do it. So that's one of the things I think sometimes fans don't get. They do the same thing at the catching position with Kurt Suzuki, as an example, who's 35. And they go, he's hitting. Gomes isn't. You got to play him every day. Part of the reason sometimes why these guys are so productive now is that they know they can't play every day. I was listening to an interview with Mickey Callaway yesterday on the radio talking about Robinson Cano. And he was referencing his numbers basically right after he comes off the injured list a couple of times or after days off. And he said, what we've learned this year with him is he can still be Robinson Cano. We just probably need to spell him two times a week to do it. He's got to be fresh. His body's got to be feeling right. Kendrick's in that category.
Yes,
he's 36 years old.
Yeah.
And if you're going to have one of the oldest lineups and oldest teams in baseball, and the Nats in a lot of ways do, then you need to pay attention to things like that. They enter play, as we said, 1.5 games up today on the Cubs and the Brewers. They're the first game to start. First pitch at 1:15 East time. You will hear that game in our time slot in our final hour today. We're actually going to be done right around 12:45 early today here on Grant and Danny. Max Scherzer pitches. You need him to go out and give you 8 or 9 maxes today. You need Scherzer to Scherz, basically, is how this needs to go. Adam Wainwright pitches for St. Louis. He's 12-9 on the season. He's been a tough customer for a long time. A guy that strikes out nearly a batter per inning and has an ERA at 4 on the dot. But if Scherzer pitches like he's capable of in the late innings, you'll have a real good chance to win. The Brewers host the Padres again tonight at 7:40. They're just not losing. And the Reds are at the Cubs in 8:05 first pitch. Chicago's got John Lester on the hill tonight, who's a 13-game winner for them. He's about as boom or bust as it gets right now.
Yeah.
He's either great and he goes out there and he strikes out 9 and 6 scoreless innings like he did against the Mariners a couple starts ago, or he's out of the game in the fifth, giving up 11 hits or 8 earned runs like he's done in his last 2 starts. But Lester with that 4.6 ERA pitching for the Cubs. So tonight you are pulling for the Padres, you are pulling for the Reds, and of course today right here at 1:15 on the Fan, you need the Nats to get another huge win over the Cardinals. It's fun though. 12 games left. The sprint is on.
Here we are.
I know it's anxiety-laced and it is tense, but we've never had this before in this town.
No,
they've run away with divisions and made the playoffs. They've hid, and we've known for weeks they were going to make it. To have September 18th baseball being played, Danny, and to not know if they're going to get in or not, there is something really, really fun about this.
It's exciting, but you touched on it. It is nerve-wracking as all hell. It is. It's hard. It feels like every time the Nats score, you look up at the scoreboard, of course Milwaukee just homered. Of course Moustakas just cleared the bases. Or of course some guy I've never heard of had a huge base hit for Chicago or whatever else. But it is. It's intense. It takes years off your life, but it's fun.
Our first look at the Redskins and the Bears and some thoughts on Mitch Trubisky, the quarterback in Chicago who's been struggling through two games. Next on Grant and Danny, later in the hour, we'll get into Eli Manning being benched for Daniel Jones. Will Eli make the Hall of Fame? Should he make the Hall of Fame? And remember, next hour, Kevin Bacon at 11, Jimmy Moreland at 11:30 on The Fan.
We are, Grant and Danny, we are Window Nation guys. Here's what happened. Many moons ago in the old condominium, right, we were paying too much for energy bills. I said, no more. No mas, I said. And I called Window Nation. Dave, the sales rep from Window Nation, came to the place, did an inspection, did a run-through, gave me some options. They fit all the new windows that I got in the house to the HOA requirements, which are stringent and a pain in the tuchus. Got a new sliding glass door, increased the value of my home, stop paying those high energy bills. Window Nation is awesome.
Our guy Dave Burkhart's going to be back out at the house soon, I believe.
He's coming back?
I'm getting a window in the kitchen over top of the sink. Going to be cool. I need the new installation, so there's only one guy, only one crew to call. That's my friends at Window Nation who have installed over 150,000 windows in the last year, 99.5% of the time, including with me and with Danny. No follow-up service was required. They've installed over 450,000 windows in over 80,000 homes. And their back-to-school sale right now is just killing it, as it should be, because it's a great offer. Buy two windows, get two free. That's buy two, get two, plus 0% for 18 months. That's 0% until 2021. Call them at 866-90-NATION if you need windows. Get it taken care of, 866-90-NATION, or go to windownation.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Redskins Bears on Monday Night Football means two things. One, the entire country gets to watch the Redskins play a night game at home. Two, and this is more important and probably more positive, we get to lay around all day on Sunday and watch other NFL teams play.
Oh, indeed.
It's my favorite thing. I was telling someone recently, week 1, 1 o'clock Redskins kickoffs are a little bit of a annoyance to me because I want that first week. I'd love a Sunday night game or a Monday night game or even a 4 o'clock game out west. I want to just be able to flip around at 1 o'clock for the first Sunday of the fall and watch nine other teams play and not have to worry about watching the Redskins. But it took till week 3, better than several weeks from now, we get a Sunday to watch football that isn't the bye week.
I do like that. I think the Redskins should always play Sunday at 1 without exception, but I see your point. It is a nice breather. It's a nice refresher. What I want is for that little warning sign to come up on my television. Hey, are you still watching? Because the channel's been stuck on Red Zone for 14 hours.
Now hit a button to let us know you're still alive.
There's no reason for me to navigate away for a single second. Because I'm getting up to date on all of the games. I'm getting the cliff notes on every single foosball game that's taking place. And it's delightful and joyous. Hey, are you still here? Hey. Yep, still here, buddy. I'll just hit okay. Go right back to it. Go ahead, Scott Hansen. Navigate.
Just trying to make sure that everything's okay with you. So the Bears have a quarterback problem right now. The Redskins' opponent on Monday night is excellent defensively. They can rush the quarterback. They can stop the run. And they can get after you and force you into big mistakes. I heard a quote from Eddie Jackson, their safety, the other day where he says, our goal is to force 3 turnovers a game. Now, they have not been doing that, for the record. Last year, they did plenty. But they have enough playmakers that that's actually realistic, and it doesn't sound crazy when they say it. Here's the problem for Chicago. One, their weapons on offense in the passing game outside of Allen Robinson have done almost nothing. And two, and I think this is a direct correlation with that, their quarterback, Mitch Trubisky, just looks like a guy that is a detriment. He looks like he's going to hold this team back. And the evidence I've got is Matt Nagy's play calling. If you want to know what he thinks about his own quarterback, from the 46-yard line and in this past week, Danny, the Bears had 18 plays.
Okay.
They ran 15 times and asked Trubisky to throw only 3 times. From the Denver 46-yard line into the goal line. They don't trust him enough to put the ball in his hands almost at all. And what you see right now is they've got one running back in Tariq Cohen who catches a lot of balls out of the backfield. Robinson is the wide receiver who is effective in the passing game. And other than that, they have nothing else. They've got a tight end with 4 catches. Taylor Gabriel has 3 catches. Another running back with 2. They don't have wide receivers catching the football other than Allen Robinson. It's pretty unbelievable. But I think it's a Mitch Trubisky problem for them.
I'm 100% sure of it. That guy stinks. Maybe he's good one day. Today's not that day. Now, maybe they look up and go, okay, sake of argument, right? Week one, it's a weird thing. Maybe it's just a week one, kind of a throwaway sample. Green Bay's defense appears to be much improved. They were good against Minnesota. They were good week one against Chicago. Denver's offense is truthful. They are good. Denver's defense, rather. Denver's defense is legit, despite the fact their offense is filled with sadness and regret. Maybe this week three landing spot against, objectively, the worst defense they've played so far might be the time he gets going. Also, Trey Burton kind of returning to health. He only played last week and was only in a quarter of the snaps. He hadn't been himself, didn't play in week one. Maybe that helps you a little bit. A guy that was a fairly dynamic tight end, I would say, is capable of some things. But right now, all the reports that we saw in the offseason are matching up with the production, right? Sometimes those reports don't match up, right? Where you hear about a guy that's sensational in training camp, or he looks great, or he looks better than he ever has. All the reports were alarming. If you're a Chicago fan, you were reading that they've had to simplify the playbook in year two for Mitch Trubisky. They're taking things out to make him more comfortable. This should not be what's happening at this time. This should be the adding. This should be the layering. This should be the building, the development. Now we're on to, you know, the 200-level course of college. He's sitting there doing the rudimentary math stuff. It is
4.8 yards per attempt.
Which is impossible to do in this day and age.
4.8 yards per attempt. I'll tell you how you do it. You only throw to running backs.
Yeah.
And everything's at the line of scrimmage. You know, it's bubbles and it smokes to a Taylor Gabriel, and you're just kind of slinging the ball out in space to Cohen or Davis, who have a combined 16 catches out of the backfield. Now, one thing that I think the Bears will adjust this week in their game planning for the Redskins with an extra day, they're going to start feeding David Montgomery, and they're going to, at least for the moment, go away from the Mike Davis experience, which has been a bad experience. He was the backup in Seattle. He's probably a backup running back in this league. There's nothing wrong with being a number two or a number three back. That's what he is.
Yeah, he's bigger, more you know, straight ahead, plodding, physical, yeah.
But they had given him a bunch of carries in their first game. They, about midway through game two, realized, okay, this isn't it. It's not like Montgomery's been great. He's averaging 3.3 yards per carry. As a team overall, they're averaging barely over 4, and that's with Cordarrelle Patterson rushing for 50 yards on 3 attempts.
Yeah.
So they can't really run the ball that well just yet. Again, I think that's because teams are loading up the box.
Wouldn't you?
This is the plan. This is what the Redskins need to do. You can't have enough defenders in the box to stop David Montgomery. Landon Collins should be a fourth linebacker in this game. And you should dare Mitch Trubisky to make throws. And if he beats you, throwing for 327 and 3, slinging it around, and Allen Robinson, who's going to get his numbers, let's say he goes for 7 and 126, isn't the only guy that is making catches down the field. If someone else finally steps up, like their former second-round pick who's got 1 catch for 2 yards, Anthony Miller right now, great. Then they win. Then you take off your cap and you tip it to them and you say, you called our bluff. But you cannot allow them to run the ball. If you stop the run, I think you beat the Bears.
I've got this inescapable feeling, even though it's Monday night, even though it's primetime, even though it's that stupid stadium, even though all the dark forces and all the factors of history have worked against the Redskins, as I'm starting to do a lot of reading, because we don't have internet and television just yet at the new house, right? It's getting set up this week. I've been doing a lot of reading on my phone, a lot of studying, a lot of looking at the Bears and recaps and different things. I've got this inescapable feeling that the Redskins beat the Bears on Monday night. That's dangerous. That's obviously absurd given the history. But there's something about this group on offense that just the operation isn't right. There's a disconnect. They're not sure which way.
The Bears you're talking about?
Talking about the Bears. They're not sure which way is up.
Okay, you're right. Through two games, you're 100% right. They have played a Green Bay defense.
Which is good now.
That looks good.
Yep.
And a Denver defense that you said is very good. You know who they play on Monday night?
The Redskins.
A Redskins defense that is in the bottom three in the league in almost every single category.
Both markets are doing the same thing right now. In Chicago, they're going, well, the offense is not getting going yet, but they got a soft landing spot in Washington. And we're going, that offense sucks and Mitch Trubisky's terrible. Maybe this is the week the defense gets right. Somebody's going to be wrong. I can't look at what they're doing in terms of deployment and how dynamic Nagy's offense was last year. They've regressed to this tiny little shell, like what the Redskins basically had to do with Josh Johnson and Mark Sanchez, where they like don't they have a 1/1,000,000th of the playbook accessible to them, and it's just a bunch of gimmick stuff. They're very stoppable.
They'll be able to scheme up some really strong games, though. Mitch Trubisky had a 6-touchdown game. He's had a couple of games where he was great. He had a perfect quarterback rating in a game because Matt Nagy is smart. I just hope this isn't that game. But he has an extra day to prepare, which doesn't bode well. Defensively, this is a very simple proposition for Washington on Monday night. Play well and you win. This offense is going to give you a chance to shut them down. They have scored 3 and 16 points in a gifted W from officials this past week against the Broncos. Gifted that win. Terrible roughing the passer call on their game-winning drive. And got a timeout with a final second on the clock that 100% of the time you don't normally get. If not for that, they scored 16 points through two games.
Mm-hmm.
Figure it out. Stop them. Eli Manning's been benched for Daniel Jones. Will he make the Hall of Fame and should he make the Hall of Fame? We'll take your calls. We'll weigh in next on Grant and Danny.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
62 passing touchdowns, 8th all-time, 56,537 yards, 7th all-time. And he did it in a market in New York with all the media fanfare and attention that normally leads to controversy and scrutiny, and he was fairly unblemished throughout much of his career. That's all great. I think a lot of those things are just signs that he was pretty good for a really, really long time. He played from 2004 to 2019. Here for me is my case against him, Danny. If you look up on, say, Pro Football Reference or one of these sites, his numbers, and you look for what I call black ink, which means they bold the numbers where you led the league at any point, there is not a single positive statistic, not one, where he had any bold ink during his career. Now, he led the league in interceptions 3 times.
That's bold.
He led the league in sack percentage at some point in his career. Eli Manning, really good player. One of the biggest reasons why the Giants won their last 2 Super Bowls. Probably the biggest reason, frankly. Got really hot and played really well in the playoffs. Not a Hall of Famer to me.
2 things I have no doubt about. Number 1, that he will get in. He will be a Hall of Famer. For the reasons you mentioned, he played in New York and he won 2 Super Bowls, and the people that vote on these things are still simpletons. That'll be the end of their conversation. He won 2 Super Bowls! He played in New York.
I'm with you. I think he'll get in.
If he was Eli Peters and he played in Jacksonville, no one would give a damn. But he played in New York, and he's Archie Manning's son. He's going to the Hall of Fame.
So I disagree with that only because I think your first comment is accurate, which is because he won 2 titles... You almost end the sentence there. You could compare him in his own draft class to, say, Ben Roethlisberger, who also won 2 Super Bowls, who, in fact, had less to do specifically with the first Super Bowl than Eli did with either of his Super Bowls. I think Ben Roethlisberger way more deserving on the field 100%. Of the Hall of Fame than Eli Manning. Ben Roethlisberger, for a period, was one of the best quarterbacks in football. I've never for one second thought that about Eli Manning. Not once. Where would you say, at his apex, whatever his best season was, he ranked among quarterbacks in this league? Ever higher than the back end of the top 10?
Yeah, I'd say anecdotally 7th or 8th. And he's
Roethlisberger led the league in yards. Yeah, he's led the league in touchdown percentage. Matter of fact, he's led the league in completions and attempts, yards 2 times. He's led the league in yards per game 3 times. There are so many categories where he was elite. Eli Manning never had that.
You have to look really carefully to try to find some awards. He was never the best player on his own team, was never the best player in his own division, was never the best player in the league. I mean, any measure that you would find, you would never say, oh, that guy's a star, that guy's perfect, that guy's great, right? Interception percentage career, the same as Jim Harbaugh. Touchdown percentage less than Jameis Winston. A quarterback rating for his career less than Mark Bulger. A yards per attempt equivalent of David Garrard. The Hall of Fame thing that he did was longevity. He deserves credit for that, by the way. This is me saying, that's awesome. Starting as many games in a row as he did, look at what happened just this past week.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Every quarterback got hurt. Amazing.
Basically, 232, I think it was, straight games for Eli Manning, because I don't even count when the guy with the bad haircut, Ben McAdoo, benched him for
Geno Smith. The dumbest thing I've ever seen. That is Hall of Fame worthy. That's amazing. That is an incredible thing that should never be taken away. Me saying you're not a Hall of Famer doesn't mean you didn't have a great career. He had a great career. A lot of guys had great careers. They're not Hall of Famers. His career numbers are basically in line with Mark Brunell. His career numbers are basically in line with a back end, as you said, of the top half of the league in terms of quarterback play.
Yeah, he spent more years, I think, somewhere around like the 18th to 20th best quarterback in football than 10th to 12th. He has been a liability for the majority of the last few seasons. In fact, I'll go one step further. Now, this is where I'll lose a lot of people. I just want you guys to know I'm about to lose you here. You're going to disagree with me and call me crazy, and that's cool. You're allowed to. But I'm correct. Philip Rivers, more deserving of the Hall of Fame than Eli Manning. Philip Rivers, who's never won a Super Bowl, never sniffed a Super Bowl. Philip Rivers, who has led the league in completion percentage.
One AFC title game.
Has led the league in yards. Has led the league in touchdowns. Has led the league in touchdown percentage. Has led the league in yards per attempt 3 consecutive seasons at one point. And in average yards per attempt, twice. In yards per completion. In yards per game. In quarterback rating. All areas where he has been the best in football at some point in his career. Again, Eli Manning, none of those things. Now, part of the discussion will end up being, I just got a tweet from Brian who says, Terry Bradshaw Hall of Fame. Terry Bradshaw shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame either, in my opinion.
It's the era, though, I will say. It was obviously very different interceptions. I mean, John Elway had some awful stats for the first half of his career.
Right.
No doubt in my mind, Elway is a Hall of Famer. But in the era that we're in, where it's easier to pass than it's ever been before, that's encompassed basically Eli Manning's entire career, he's at the bottom end of regular starters. A lower completion percentage. Part of that is offense and design. But the other part is not that special. Not that great. 2 great playoff runs. And really, 1 great playoff run. Because the other was a front four that was unstoppable, that was unleashed, and vaunted them to the Super Bowl. And he basically had to make a couple completions a game. 2011, he was outstanding in the postseason. Very Flacco-esque, if I might add.
Yes,
that.
He had a hell of a run.
65% completion percentage, 1,220 yards, 9 touchdowns, 1 pick, took care of the football, and was awesome.
He was amazing.
2011 was great. 4 great playoff games should not a Hall of Famer make. He is not Hall of Fame worthy, and there's also no doubt in my mind he gets in.
Well, so I'm very sure about that, too, and it really starts and ends with 2 Super Bowls. I think the fact, like you said, that he played in New York is going to benefit him immensely anyway. What was amazing to me as I listened to radio all around the country yesterday, a lot of people feel like he might not get in, and I think they're nuts.
I think you're crazy if you think that.
Because, and their case is the same as ours. Well, look at these numbers. He never really dot, dot, dot. It doesn't matter. People can't help themselves. He won 2 Super Bowls and was really good in the playoffs as they did. Joe Flacco might get in because there's enough dumb people out there voting.
This is basically, I mean, we've seen this in baseball forever, right? Where we understand now how dependent a win is for a pitcher. So it used to be, he didn't win 300 games. He's not getting in the Hall of Fame. Now we know. Now we know that Max Scherzer, the best pitcher alive, is going to get in the Hall of Fame even without that magical 300-win plateau. It's
and
a different
we know,
era.
By the way, we know that pitching wins and losses don't get you a Cy Young Award either.
Yeah.
Ask Jacob deGrom last year. And we've had guests on the show say, he shouldn't have won it. He only won X amount of games. That's a ridiculous comment.
Yeah, so the line, because more information is available, has moved. Football is still, despite the use of proprietary data and how smart people are about recovery and maximizing play calling and different things, it's still a game run and covered by dinosaurs, where they'll look at a quarterback and go, did he win? Quarterback won, therefore he was good. So Drew Brees, I guess, sucked for 3 years in a row when he went 7-9. Oh, he was still excellent and the team was falling apart around him? Good thing he figured it out again so they could go 13-3. Nobody seems to want to qualify or quantify those things. They'll just look at Super Bowl wins. They'll look at big games that he won. Even by that definition, by the way, a career 500 quarterback as a starter. There is one metric. Let me back that up. There are two metrics that are Hall of Fame worthy for Eli Manning. One is the number of starts and the longevity that he made. That's incredible. Should not be taken away. Should not be taken for granted. Should not be scoffed at. That's awesome. He answered the bell every single day. And the other was that he was the quarterback during two Super Bowl wins. That is not a Hall of Fame resume because the rest of the numbers, the rest of the play do not add up. And frankly, it's not close, but he's getting in because he played in New York and they won two Super Bowls.
What do you guys think? Eli Manning, Hall of Famer. Yes or no in your opinion, and will he get in? 800-636-1067. 17 minutes from now at 11. Expected to be joined by Kevin Bacon today and Jimmy Moreland, Redskins cornerback. The People's Corner is on the show at 11:30.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Shorter show than normal today. We're with you until 12:45. Next hour, Kevin Bacon at 11 and 12 minutes and Jimmy Moreland at 11:30. Should be a fun hour of radio for us here on Grant and Danny. We're talking Eli Manning. Is he going to get to the Hall of Fame? We are in lockstep, it sounds like. Neither of us think he should. Both of us think he will. I will be stunned if he doesn't. I cannot believe the number of people around the country who are saying, well, maybe eventually he'll get in. Two Super Bowls in the media era, the social media era, in New York City. People don't need to see any more than that, I don't think, even though my take is very simple. Again, I would have a small Hall of Fame. You don't get in if you're not one of the best players at your position for many, many, many years. He's never been close to one of the best players at his position at any point during his career. Let's go to Matt in Stafford on G&D. What's up?
Matty.
Hey, I'm about to be on the radio right before Kevin Bacon. So that's pretty neat.
That's not bad.
Nice little warm up.
The two Super Bowls for Eli, that etches it in granite for me. And the question it brings up is, if Flacco had another decent year and won another Super Bowl, would you put him in? And the answer for me, I guess, is yes. Once you get that second Super Bowl, I don't know why, but you're in after that.
Yeah, that's kind of been the way that people think. Again, I don't do it that way. Super Bowls are team accomplishments. You get something for winning a Super Bowl. It's called a Lombardi Trophy.
Yeah, I need no.
The Hall of Fame is about your individual excellence over the duration of your career.
I want no Jim McMahons, no Trent Dilfers, no Flaccos, no one-hit wonders in my Hall of Fame.
What about two-hit wonders?
Two, it's now you have to start to look at it, and I've looked at it. You know what I mean? Like we have to have context. The first one was not about him. The second one really was. 2011, he was amazing in the postseason.
He got drafted in 04.
Mm-hmm.
He was the first pick and was traded with Phil Rivers because he didn't want to go to San Diego. Which never made sense to me. Just a beautiful place.
Put on that sour face. Remember that sour face you had?
Of course. The beginning of the Eli face.
Yeah.
Rivers, to me, in before him. Roethlisberger, in before him. I think both are more deserving than Eli. Ed in Arlington, you're on Grant and Danny. What's up?
All right. Listen, guys. I've been a Giants fan for 50 years. And I'm on the fence about this. But if you put Philip Rivers in the Hall of Fame, you got to put Eli in the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's all about, you know, it's about winning, and it is about stats. Like, I was never happy with Dan Fouts going into the Hall of Fame. What did he ever win? Nothing. But Eli's also pretty high on the list, I think, for comebacks. I think he's eighth all time and everything. And I know he's hard to love if you're not a Giants fan.
I promise you, though, Ed, it really has nothing to do with him being a Giants fan. I can't speak for Danny. He does the rivalry, and I hate the Cowboys thing more than I do. I always liked Tony Romo a lot more than the industry did. I thought narratives about him were false. There are players and organizations around the division I love. Saquon Barkley might be one of my favorite players in the league. It's just he hasn't been that good thing for the majority of his career. I mean, there are seasons where he's thrown over 25 interceptions.
You heard the phrase, and this is the phrase that will get used by old school football people. What has he ever won? We're talking about somebody else, right? Where you go, is it Phil Rivers' fault that the San Diego and now LA Chargers have not won a Super Bowl? I would say probably not.
It's not.
But to the folks like that, and the guys like that get votes. There are guys that are going to say Eli Manning won two Super Bowls.
Well, that's why he's going to get in.
So if you want to look at career record, Eli Manning is a 500 career quarterback. 500.
He has led the league in anything, three times in his career. No, four times in his career. Interceptions three times and sack percentage once. That's kind of the list for Eli Manning. And I think 1 year, actually, he did lead the league in fourth quarter comeback. So that's a positive stat.
He does have some of those, yes.
So I'll give him that. Let's go to Jim in Rockville. Hey, Jim, how's it going?
Yeah, I think Eli is mediocre. I think his whole career beyond the Super Bowls is mediocre. So he had a couple good years. Never thought he was a great quarterback. He lives off his dad and his brother's name. Plus, I can't stand the fact to see it. 6'5". 240-pound guy look like he's so afraid to get hit. A guy gets 10 yards from him and he throws the ball on the ground. I can't stand Eli. Sorry.
Thanks, buddy. I won't go as far as to say he lives off Peyton or his father because he has his own accomplishments.
Yeah.
He's top 10 in several categories.
Really good career.
That's partially because he played his entire career in the most passer-friendly era we've had. Steve Gaithersburg, you're on the Fan.
Hey, for me, Eli's definitely a Hall of Famer. I mean, it's not a regular season Hall of Fame. It's entirely of a career Hall of Fame. I mean, it's not Eli's fault that they haven't run spread offenses like the Steelers or Chargers or Patriots over the past 10 years, and their O-lines have stunk. Eric Flowers, for example, and stuff like that. And, I mean, Philip Rivers, come on now. I mean, he's like a choking dog in the playoffs. He'll never beat the Patriots. And those throws from Eli on the first Super Bowl to Tyrion Plaxico, those alone get him into the Hall of Fame.
No, they don't. Thank you for the call. I shouldn't say no, they don't. That's your opinion. But guess what?
They're going to.
Three or four throws don't make you Hall of Famer when you play 15 years. I think that that's so watered down and ridiculous. Well, he made that throw to Tyree. That's a Hall of Famer. You don't make the Hall of Fame on a handful of snaps. I'm sorry. There's a bunch of years of him stinking up the joint that also should matter a little bit. Appreciate the phone call. I don't get the dogging of Rivers. I never really have. He's never beat the Patriots. Like, that's some crime. That he's never beat the greatest coach and one of the greatest quarterbacks ever with a bad defense most of the time and very little running game. Single-handedly didn't beat the Patriots. That's true.
So the difference is career playoff record, Manning 8-4, Rivers 5-6. What about the years that Eli Manning couldn't get to the postseason? Do we care about those or no? Philip Rivers has a winning record as a quarterback. Eli Manning doesn't, but we pick and choose.
Kevin Bacon's supposed to join us top of the hour at 11, which could be fun, and Jimmy Moreland at 11:30. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to the Fan.
Hey guys, Danny Ruye here for my pals at the St. James. I love these guys. This is an amazing facility. You got to see it. There's no off season at the St. James. The DMV's hottest destination for sports, wellness, and active entertainment. The St. James, it's a sports utopia. There's something for everybody. The complex houses, multiple state-of-the-art venues. They have two regulation-sized ice rinks, two, a turf field house, gymnastics center, even an Olympic-sized pool. Last time I was over there was a swim meet going on, and then I went into the next room, the giant water park. Oh, yeah, by the way, they have a giant water park. There was a birthday party taking place. Anything you want under the sun, it is there at the St. James. It's unbelievable. Kids can play in that active entertainment center with climbing and bouldering walls, trampolines, VR games, ropes course, and that water park that I mentioned. Perfect place to host your birthday party, corporate event, whatever the heck you want to do, you can do it there at the St. James. The Premium Health Club offers top-of-the-line equipment and weights, dedicated personal trainers to help you achieve your body goals. Every new member gets two complimentary health assessments with a personal trainer. Take advantage of that. You got to check this place out. With so much under one roof, you got to see it to believe. Visit thestjames.com to learn more and schedule a tour. That's thestjames.com. St. James, welcome to your bedroom.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.